appreciate all of you staying. I know it'll be a treat. And Matt's been a special blessing to me. Of course, he's a blessing to our family as well. And Matt was a former Navy rescue diver. And he's a Cordon Bleu chef. And he's a personal trainer. And according to Crystal, he walks, talks, chew gum, and blow in the dark simultaneously. And so that's a pretty good resume. Matt has the perfect blend in a personal trainer because he pushes you way beyond where you thought you could go, but he's not nasty while he's doing it. And I appreciate having a personal trainer who's not a drill sergeant, but pushes me because I need the pushing. At any rate, Matt's going to come and talk about some of the fallacies of fitness, and I think it'll be very informative. And then we're going to have a little Q&A time afterwards as well. And so we've got a mic up here so folks can hear you. And, you know, some people may wonder where this kind of topic fits in the ministry of a church. But, you know, John said, I think it's 1 John 3 and verse 2, I pray that your whole spirit and soul and body may be in health. You know, we are a tripartite being. We are spirit, which is that part of us that communicates to God. We're soul, which is our mind, will, and emotions, or where we think, where we feel, and how we make decisions. And we're a body. We have to carry all this around in an earth suit. And how you take care of your earth suit while you're here on earth really does make a difference in how well you can serve the Lord Jesus Christ. You can, you know, do you want, when you're 70 years old, to still be actively serving the Lord as our pastor and his wife are? Or do you want, at that age, to already be, you know, one foot in a nursing home and can't get out to do much? A lot of that has to do with the decisions we make on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, my goal is 20 years from now to still be cleaning my son's clock and racquetball, and I'm well on my way to doing that. All right, so Matt, go with.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for staying. You're going to have to pardon me fiddling with this thing because it's the first time I've ever worn one. I really intend today's lesson to be interactive. If anyone has any questions at any time, really want you to ask me, because there's a whole lot of information out there, and most of it is awful information. And this is intended to be a series of lectures, hopefully more like interactive lessons rather than lectures. But today we're going to start out with some of the most prominent fallacies in fitness. So first, let's start off with our biblical piece. And as Pastor Roland said and Pastor Thorne said today, all day in the lecture, we made lots of analogies about fitness. But really the most meaningful thing I can say regarding fitness is we are stewards of God's blessings, and we needed to do whatever we can to take care of our bodies. And the more healthy you are, the more able you are, the longer you're going to be able to serve the Lord. So next time we read about the Exodus, or you read about Moses scaling a mountain thousands of times throughout his life, remember that he was hundreds of years old, and I want you to imagine what it was like in the Exodus to pick up everything that you could carry on your back and travel for hundreds of miles on foot. How many of you, you don't have to raise your hands, how many of you could pick up everything that you could carry and walk for hundreds of miles right now? And that leads us to my first myth here. Well, before we get into the myths, we need to understand that the media distorts reality. And every time that you go to the grocery store, I know that you see a lot of magazines on the racks, and the reality of fitness and nutrition is so distorted and full of well-intentioned and usually sales-motivated bad information that an advanced understanding of these subjects is required to separate fact from fiction. So it was actually long after I began my path to become a personal trainer that I actually understood how false some of these things that we've led to believe are. Most folks' definitions of fitness usually involve having a flat stomach, no jiggling anywhere, and sometimes a Greek statuesque physique. That's not true at all. The fact of the matter is that you can be perfectly fit in a cardiovascular disease / cancer risk factor related sense by regularly exercising and managing your food intake deliberately. So let's talk about this for just a second. Cardiovascular disease is now the leading cause of death. And I know that we hear that constantly. We hear it day in and day out. It doesn't really sink in. But let's think about back in the 1900s when the leading causes of diseases, the leading cause of death, were communicable diseases like tuberculosis. Now, cardiovascular disease and cancers are attributed, they are our top killers. They're attributed completely to lifestyle choices, bad lifestyle choices. So that's a profound point. So, as I said, the fact of the matter is that you can be perfectly fit in a sense of cardiovascular disease and cancer risk factor related since by regularly exercising and managing your food intake. So basically you can take yourself out of the running for all the things that kill us just by managing what you eat loosely and exercising regularly. Now, you do not need to have washboard abs, toned anything, or get into a size 6 to be considered to be fit. So these are our top cardiovascular, anytime you see the CVD, that's cardiovascular disease. These are our top risk factors. Tobacco use. Hopefully nobody in here uses tobacco. High blood pressure. Lots of us have high blood pressure. Some of us can't help it at all. It can be hereditary. Same thing with high blood pressure. But I really want you to look at these last three. They're underlined for a reason. 4 is physical inactivity. 5 is obesity. 6 is diabetes. Diabetes is on the rise because of obesity. But those last three things you can control just by exercising and maintaining your diet. The previous three, tobacco use, you can control that one. You can't really control your genetics, but you can make a big impact on your blood pressure and your cholesterol just by exercising and eating. Okay. Now in the micro print here, I'll just read off the pertinent facts. This is the obligatory scary slide, by the way. After this, it gets fun. So, major risk factors that can be changed, and on the right side, you have the percentage of U.S. adults with a risk factor. Number 1 is tobacco use. 2, high blood pressure. 3, high cholesterol. Number 4, physical inactivity. 39% of Americans are physically inactive. 5, obesity and overweight. 66% of Americans are overweight. So 60% of us just straight out of the box have a major risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And 6 is diabetes, 10.7%. Okay. So let's start out with our first myth, and this is the biggest one that I could muster for the very first point, and this is where I want you guys to start thinking and asking questions. But the first myth is the basic understanding of weight loss revolves around the assumption that fewer calories in plus more calories out equals weight loss. So if I eat less than I'm expending, then I'm going to lose weight. The major assumption is that the subject is overweight because he or she eats too much. Now, you don't have to raise your hands, but who here thinks that they eat too much and that's why they're overweight? This assumption applies the first law of thermodynamics to the human body. That doesn't sound quite right, does it? The first law of thermodynamics is that energy can be changed from one form to another. Namely, your food entering your body, which is the fuel, is exchanged for your daily activity. This is true regarding our bodies, but it is an oversimplification. Food is fuel, as I just said, and it provides you the ability to be alive at a minimum. The truth is that obesity is caused by a frustratingly large number of factors, such as activity level, including too much activity, and I'll explain that in just a second, physical stress, emotional stress, quality of sleep, dietary makeup, age and genetics are red because you can't control those, and hormonal imbalances brought on by major events such as pregnancy and all the aforementioned factors. Now that's a huge bit of information to process, but what I'm telling you is if you're overweight, it might not be because you're eating too much. It could be because of this whole thing. I mean, raise your hand if you've had kids. Lots of people. that's a huge event in your life, and you're never going to be the same afterwards. Some people are lucky, some people are not. Some people go back to the way that they were, most people don't. And on the piece of too much activity, I'm going to have you guys raising your hands a whole lot during this. Just by a raise of hands, how many people have never had a gym membership? And this is, I hope there's a lot of hands.
Ever.
Okay. Now, most people who have never been into a gym are usually going to assume that's going to be full of a whole bunch of meatheads and people who are perfect physically. And that's really not the case most of the time. You're only going to have a couple bodybuilders, but most people in there are going to be vastly unhappy about their physique, and they're trying to improve it. So that's the first roadblock I would like to remove from your journey. So if you think that you're going to be judged instantly by walking into a gym, that's not true. So I've seen, on that point, I've seen a lot of guys at my gym, they have lost their first 20 pounds, and they hit a roadblock, so their answer is eat less and exercise more. And by exercising more, doing 2-a-days and things like that, their body actually goes into a survival mode where they perceive immense amounts of physical stress, and their body's reaction is to convert everything that they eat into fat and preserve it. So you'll see people who work out literally twice a day, very hard, sweating like you can't believe, and their physiques have not changed for years. They think the answer is just to pile more exercise on top. That's a good way to make yourself hang on to more fat. The truth continued. In my experience as a trainer, there are far more weight loss clients who actually eat too little or too infrequently than eat too much. And this is a staggering point. I go through fitness assessments with lots of people, throughout a week. And Crystal can attest to this. Most people, they tell me how they eat, and most people will say, I eat real healthy, I wake up, I'm real good, I don't eat any junk for breakfast, I have a cup of coffee, and then I'm real good, I don't eat until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I have a snack, and then at dinner time I have a salad, and that's all I eat. I can't believe I'm not losing weight. Well, the fact of the matter is that this is providing huge physical stress to your body because you're not getting enough, therefore everything that you eat, your body converts into fat. The calories in, calories out approach addresses the symptom, which is overweightness, rather than the underlying causes of being fat, which is that your metabolism is too slow to process the fuel taken in. So do you understand that? It's like going to the doctor and having a, let's say that you have high cholesterol. You go into the doctor and he gives you cholesterol medication and says this is going to bring your cholesterol levels down. It doesn't do anything for what actually caused your high cholesterol. It just brings that number down. So this is exactly the same thing regarding weight. You have too much fat, so let's take that fat off. Let's not address why you're fat. The problem with diet-only approach to weight loss is it seeks to lose weight without an attempt to maintain or improve your lean muscle mass. Lean muscle mass is the body's engine and capability to expend energy. When dieting only without lean muscle mass, without building lean muscle mass, weight will be lost, but your metabolism will actually slow down and become even less sufficient. So to begin with, you need to lose weight because your metabolism can't keep up. And when you use extreme calorie restriction, you're losing weight, but you're slowing your metabolism down even slower. If you use a diet-only approach, you're addressing the problem, which is too much fat, and not actually making the cause worse, which is your metabolism is too slow. Because much of the weight loss will be from lean muscle mass as well as fat. When you return to a normal diet, which you will, which is the ultimate goal of the exercise program, it's not a temporary thing. A diet is not a temporary thing. You need a healthy way of life. When you return to your normal, you will gain the weight back and then some. This is known as yo-yo dieting. Do we have any questions yet? Anybody? No. Okay. Next myth, I love this one. And by love, I mean I hate when I hear this. Some foods are fattening. Next on this, the inverse of some foods are fattening. If you log on to the internet, there's about 15 cover stories of amazing fat-burning foods. That's the opposite end of this one. Recently discovered is a Pandora's box of foods that actually burn fat. Whichever source is touting this amazing food conveniently is also selling it. So that should be a red flag to you. The truth, first we should define fattening. Okay, now I need some audience participation. Someone define fattening as it pertains to food. Like if I said, butter is fattening, tell me what fattening means. Okay.
High calories or how much fat makes
you. Okay. So ultimately it makes you fatter. Okay. First, we should define fattening as having the ability or tendency to make one fat or gain weight. Okay. Using this definition, all food is fattening. I hope none of you actually read in front of me, okay? Raw broccoli can make you fat if you sit on the couch and eat 6 pounds of it a day. And under this definition, dirt is fattening, i.e., when I eat a pound of dirt, I gain a pound on the scale. And this leads me to my next point, that especially women have this issue. You look at the scale and you want that number to go down. And weight loss and muscle gain and exercise, it's not a number, it's a percentage, okay? So if I stand here and I have a 16-ounce glass of water and I weigh myself, it's going to say 195. I'll drink the glass of water, step back on the scale, it's going to say 196. That's the way it works. You weigh more before lunch than you do. You weigh more after lunch than you did before, and you weigh less after you go to the bathroom before you did. Okay? So let's not obsess over that number. All food has the possibility of being converted by your body and stored as fat. All food. There's one exception if you don't count my weight gain example, and that is water. Water is the only thing that you put in your body that does not register anything. There are no calories. There are no macronutrients. It has no nutritional balance whatsoever. How your body reacts to what you eat is defined by what it uses for fuel and how much fuel it has stored. Any questions on that one? Next myth. If I do 500,000 abdominal exercises, I will lose my belly fat. This myth calls upon the concept of site reduction, which is, in whole, a fallacy. This myth has sold billions worth of infomercials, and every magazine cover at the grocery store hints at its existence and valid exercise strategy. Let me elaborate on this. So, a lot of times I'll have, man, I'm picking on women a lot today. I'll give you an example. There's a guy who came into my gym a few days ago, and he hadn't worked out for years and years, and he's probably in his 50s. And he was a rather rotund man. And first thing he did once he walked up the stairs is he made a beeline for the abdominal exercise machines. He sat down on one, commenced to do exercises, and within literally 30 seconds he was on the floor with muscle spasms in his stomach. He thought that by doing he was so emotionally involved with the fat that's around this area right here that his fix, what he'd been taught his entire life, what we've all been taught our entire life, is that if you have belly fat, the thing to do is sit-ups. If you do enough sit-ups there, it's eventually going to go away. And the concept behind that is if I exercise the muscle group that's underneath the layer of fat where I want to remove, it's going to take fat from that area, and eventually I'm going to have a six-pack. But my best way to disprove this is I can say with confidence that you have never seen someone with a six-pack who has a flabby upper or lower body. The only people who you ever see who have defined abdomen have no fat anywhere on their body. The reason for that is that this area right here, from here to here, this is the last place where your body wants to get rid of fat. Sight reduction does not exist. Toning is a result of the development of muscular development causing skin to be pulled tighter in a conjunction with the overall body fat percentage drop. So if you want to tone your arms, the way to do that is to build your arm muscles so the skin is pulled tighter, and also at the same time practice a healthy diet and do cardiovascular exercise that reduces your body fat everywhere on your body at the same time. Now, the next slide, I'm done with my myths, and we're going to have our discussion. I just have this slide and one more. And you guys are going to help me have a robust debate after this. But why being overweight and out of shape is a bad thing? As we mentioned at the beginning, lung cancer used to be the number one killer of Americans. This is up until the 90s, guys. So smoking has gone out because we all know that it's bad and it'll kill you. So next thing left standing, and what's getting worse, is cardiovascular disease. Being overweight increases your risk of all major cancers. None of us want to die of cancer. None of us want to get it. A lot of us have had family members who are touched by it, and being overweight increases your risk of all of them. Being overweight. Why being overweight and out of shape is bad? Because you want to maximize your quality of life. Going back to my example of Moses, what if God called on you to scale a mountain and take orders from him to bring back to the people, and you couldn't because you can't make it up the mountain? It's really important as stewards of God's blessings that we are ready for Jesus to come back at any time. For a young man like me, we might be called on to defend and protect our families. And if I'm too out of shape to do that, then I'm not being part of God's plan as efficiently as I could be. So where do I start? Y'all are probably all surprised today that I haven't had y'all do push-ups and talk about exactly what you need to eat and exactly what you need to do, because I hope that some of that's going to come out in our discussion. But the most general good information I can give y'all today: start slowly with one or two changes at a time. First thing is first, move your meat. And by that I mean just get active, be active. And by activity, I mean exercise. Okay. This is, of course, an oversimplification. Activity is different than exercise. Activity is defined carrying out the activities of daily life that require any type of energy expenditure. Now, there's a major stipulation between activity and exercise, and here it is. Exercise is the intentional and methodical expenditure of energy to improve endurance, balance, strength, and overall health. Now, it's great that we worked in the garden all day yesterday, and you're exhausted right afterwards, but that is activity. The goal of exercise is that we won't be exhausted after that activity. I'm talking to my mom, actually.